This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Muthan, and you're about to embark on the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
It's full octane Kelly and Ramya with all the fixins.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's invited. And now, the big man himself, Kelly McDonald.
Wonderful to be with you again. Thank you very much for joining us on our program. We're here from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. When I say we, I say welcome in you and my co-host, Ramya Muthan, who I have to say happy Tamil New Year to.
Thank you, Kels. That's right. Puttaanda Vaazhthukal for all my Tamil people out there who are celebrating today the start of a new year. This is when the calendar year starts for us.
That's amazing. Well, what we've talked a while ago, back in January, about the different events that happened because you had, and how do you say it? I don't want to try to say it because I don't want to say it wrong, the five-day...
Yes, Thai Pongal.
That's it.
Pongal was kind of the signification of spring.
Right.
Really? Yes.
Which we kind of enliken as a somewhat of a new year, because we were talking about different, you know, what people take as their, you know, their holidays, what we recognize, what we don't in any of our cultures. Then we got on the subject of the Tamil New Year. So we were saying, oh my goodness, Ramya, you could have a whole bunch of days.
I know. This is fun this time of year for us.
Well, the best to everybody. Was there another acknowledgement we were going to make?
Absolutely. Ramadan Mubarak to all our Muslim friends out there who started their fasts today.
And I have to say that Ramya found a unique way to kind of recognize the day. I don't know if you want to call it that, you know, fun to recognize being on the End of Dave show, promoting what comes up here on Kelly and Company on Now with Dave Brown. Ramya's co-host, this is the puppy who rules the house outside the home studio, sometimes right there at her feet in the home studio, made an appearance on Now with Dave Brown because there was noise going on in the building. And he made his presence known. If any of you caught the end of Dave's show before ours during the repeat, you might have heard. He was quite vocal.
He was demanding his 5 seconds of fame, let me tell you. I think he's finally taken it to heart that he's not allowed in here during our show. And he thought, oh, well, there's another caveat I can make, or cameo, sorry. And he did it, Kels. He knew that the door was closed between him and I, but he shouted his lungs away this morning and, like you said, acknowledged the day for all of us.
Was that the most embarrassing TV thing you've had happen?
My gosh, I've never pressed mute so much in my pandemic work life. Until this morning.
I was saying on the audio vanity card that I was doing a stand-up when I was doing TV for AMI TV side. And we were at a ice carving event. Well, there was some other things going on at this winter carnival. And I was working on my, hi, welcome, I'm at, and doing all that stand-up. And I kept stumbling. You know, I'm still leaning against this, I think I was sitting on this ice bench that was made up as part of a display. And I'm sitting on it, wanting to get through the thing. People surrounded, because you got to get the viz of busy and activity and the nice look. And I kept stumbling. So some guy screams at me.
Oh, come on, I can do better than that.
I said, probably, because you're not on camera. So I tried again, and I screwed up again. Why don't I try letting you do this? Where'd you go? And he was gone. as soon as I finished, started to walk away.
I knew you could do it. Get out of here.
I said to him, get out of here. As a matter of fact, I turned to him and said, get out of here. And thinking ahead to the future, let's see what's coming up today on the program. How many types of water are available for drinking, and are some better than others? We get answers with nutritionist Julia Karanchis today.
So we're talking about pandemic life. Half of Canadians say that the coronavirus pandemic has had an ongoing impact on their mental health, and more than 4 in 10 think that the impact will last long after the pandemic. We're going to speak more about this with Dennis Trottier, Chief Mental Health Officer for KPNG in Canada.
In our collections and hobbies feature today, Leslie DePoe, she's here with us for a special day, and it's going to be to break down her love of step aerobics. We'll get into that conversation in hour two here on Kelly and Company. Well, it may not be as bad as 2020, but the 2021 hurricane season is expected to be another active one. Now, Jim Ryan, he reports on this that forecasters in Colorado at Colorado State University are predicting 17 named storms to form in the Atlantic Ocean between June 1st and November 30th.
2020 produced so many storms with winds of at least 39 miles per hour that the list of standard names was eventually exhausted. We went well into the Greek alphabet to the powerful Hurricane Iota. The first big storm of this year will take the name Anna, and if the list of usual names is used up, forecasters will move into a new list of names instead of the Greek alphabet.
Do you ever try to keep track or predict what the next name might be, or just let yourself be astounded each time they come up with one?
Astounded each time, and plus I keep forgetting. Yeah.
Yeah, you start trying to figure out, and it's amazing when we talk storms, well, the next letter is whatever. You remember a storm, and that's due to the significance of a storm. If a storm was just a little one that maybe didn't even touch land, it still got a name. We may not know about it, or you just simply forget. What would be the next letter? Yeah. And what the pattern is when they do it, right? That's another one that I think a lot of people forget: male, female, or is it this year all male, next year all female? Oh, they don't do that anymore. You know, you get
see,
mixed
that's,
up.
Yeah, I don't remember those at all. Like whether we're doing female names, male names. I just know the alphabet thing, but like you said, I forget or didn't know that a letter was already used. You know, because we know about the big ones, right? But then we don't really always know about the ones in between.
I don't even know how these guys can predict 17 forming the Atlantic. Last year, 11 storms made landfall in the U.S., causing $37 billion in damage. Again, post, you know, the season, of course, you can say, oh, wow, look how many actually hit land. But to suggest how many are forming out there, wow. Let's talk a little bit about Las Vegas, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Less grass could mean more water for Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, known for excess and indulgence, is now taking on water conservation. Lawmakers are proposing a policy banning ornamental grass, or grass that nobody walks on. They say getting rid of it can reduce annual water consumption by roughly 15% and save about 14 gallons per person per day. Last year was among the driest in the region's history when Las Vegas went a record 240 days without measurable rainfall. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Can you conceive that? 240 days without any real rain. The most you get is like, was that a drop of rain or the sweat on your brow?
Yeah, no, that's really scary to think about. But it does make me wonder what the comparison is outside of Vegas.
You mean in the desert itself or around like
just
in the west?
Just like on a good day anywhere else, you know, or in a good year anywhere else. What's the comparison, right? Like, what are we looking at when we're not thinking desert or not thinking drought?
Well, and you wonder, where does the water come from for the place anyway, if you're not getting any, you know, that kind of rain? The ornamental grass, too, the thing I'll say about that is it always blows my mind when you think that there's grass out there just for show. No, get off, stay off the grass, and that we would actually waste in a desert metropolis water on that. So it really shocks me, but, you know, like they say, the way things are, Vegas, the showman town. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. It is Kelly and Company with Ramya and Kelly getting your Tuesday program started. And we have our veterinarian up next. It's another Mythbuster time with her. We'll get into that conversation, see what she's got for us after this. In Western Canada, you can find AMI Audio on your television. Westman, channel 889, and Shaw Direct Advanced 200, channel 288 over there. Visit AMI.ca/schedules for a list of channel locations in your area. I'm Kelly McDonald, host of the program on your Tuesday, wherever you are. Welcome. Thanks for being with us. And Ramya Muthan's with me.
Yes, and today we're talking to our friend Danielle Jeankinder, veterinarian who joins us every Tuesday, and it's going to be a fact-filled segment, so let's bring her on.
The human-animal bond plays such an important role in people's lives, and as a veterinarian, it's my privilege to help keep those bonds strong and healthy. I'm Dr. Danielle Jeankinder, and welcome to Ask a Veterinarian.
So every once in a while, our vet talks to us about some common misconceptions that people have about their pets and their pets' health by doing a Mythbusters segment. So it's time for another one of those, Danielle. And this time we're talking about or uncovering myths surrounding your vets and veterinary medicine. So this is going to be interesting.
I hope so.
I think so. Well, I'm curious to see which ones you've brought up as the myths, because, you know, it's going to have maybe a bit of a personal angle or bias.
Yes, Danielle has been awesome with her personal stuff with us. Very much those disclosures.
Yeah. I might be a little scared, if I'm being honest.
Yes.
Too scared. I'm not really that scary, at least I hope
and,
not.
And it's not Halloween, Ramya.
Yeah, that's true. That's always a good thing.
So the first myth is actually just something I've noticed, that people believe that vets learn to professionally trim nails in vet school. Okay, and that's actually not true. It actually surprised me when I became a vet that so many people were reluctant to kind of cut their pet's nails because they're afraid they're going to do something wrong. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm going to tell you not to worry, because there is no course in vet school that teaches veterinarians how to trim nails in pets. And, you know, I recall that we learned in anatomy class that there were three bones in each toe on a dog or a cat, and that a nail grew from the end of the last bone in the toe. And, you know, we learned that the nails had living tissue in the middle of them and were covered by a hard, dead outer layer. Armed with only that information, we were released out into the world to trim many nails. So when I graduated from vet school, I was no more experienced at trimming nails than anyone else walking down the street. And everything I learned about the process was learned on the job through trial and error and from people who had more experience at it than me. So, you know, every time I run into a client who says to me, I can't trim the nails, and they have no logical reason really to say that. I know I really only have to give them just a little bit of confidence and just say, sure you can, you know, I had to learn, so can you, it's all good. So, you know, just a quick lesson and some nail anatomy and some training advice, you know, can go a long way to like bolstering that confidence. So
that have confidence. That reminds me of a conversation I had, Danielle. This person started to talk about, especially since they're a person of low vision, and they just got a puppy. I think his name, something like Gliz or Glizzy or something. And that person said something along the line, I'll check in with Danielle about how to get the nails trimmed and everything. She's a veterinarian, so she had to learn that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We did have to learn the hard way.
That's cool.
I love it.
But I did hear, though, that over the summer, when with the new pandemic versions of going to the vet, you know, you're doing a lot of time waiting in your car and walking up to the door and seeing other people receive their pets from their visits, etc. So there's a lot of like overhearing of different things. And I remember one of the vet techs saying, we're going to have to put him under if you want us to do his nails because it's just too difficult. And I was like, oh, man, that must be a scary nail trimming situation at home.
Yeah. And there are some pets who, you know, that just for lack of training or, you know, bad experiences or, you know, whatever reason, you know, that they are extremely difficult for sure. You know, not to downplay that, you know, but that actually isn't anything about trimming the nails. That's a behavioral issue, you know, and for sure.
And that would be along the lines of a pet that doesn't like being bathed because they can't stand the water, whether it's a cat, dog, whatever, right?
Yeah. And, you know, some pets are just more high anxiety than others. So, you know, that's just part of their temperament.
Okay. So, Danielle, what else do you have in your repertoire of this myth-busting mode we're in?
Well, myth number two, you know, my vet will always have what I need when I need it. And, you know, veterinary hospital managers and clinic owners, they do their absolute best to ensure that, you know, we have what you need for your pet in stock when you need it. But it's important to realize that, you know, every clinic keeps an inventory of commonly used medications and pet food, but there is no possible way they can keep absolutely everything on hand all of the time. You know, rarely used medications or highly specialized prescription diets might have to be ordered individually for your pet and may take a few days to come in. And the other problem is the supply chain. Most vet clinics order medications and other products from a veterinary distribution company, like a wholesaler. And if they don't have something your vet has requested, your vet will only receive a notice that the item is on back order. And that means it's temporarily unavailable. And, you know, that's been more of a problem during the pandemic. So a lot of pets have been waiting for things that we just can't get. And a lot of us have been having to recommend alternatives for things that are just unavailable. And, you know, the other thing maybe to consider is planning. And veterinary teams are working hard to meet everyone's needs, especially right now when things are really busy. And every time you call, for example, for, say, a prescription refill, you know, there's a vet that has to review that pet's file. They have to approve the refill. They have to pull the medication off the shelf. And somebody has to fill that prescription order, has to enter the information into the medical record, print a label, then count out the pills. They might have to be cut for you. They have to be packaged for pickup. And this whole entire process, you know, can take up to 15 minutes in some cases, depending on what's, you know, being requested. And that doesn't seem like a lot of time until you consider that the vet clinic is trying to take on this process with a steady stream of appointments, emergencies, and surgeries. And also there's probably other requests for refills as well. So just be aware that instant refills may not always be possible just because, you know, of like limitations in time and that. So, you know, the best way to ensure your pet never runs out of the stuff they need is to kind of plan ahead and just give your vet, you know, a little bit of lead time so they can get you what you need for when you need it.
Well, especially a time when more people than ever have pets, especially since we've gone through the pandemic and people are looking for that new companion and so on. But I would submit that never in the history of vets has that ever been possible for one to have everything on hand at any given time, Danielle.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And, you know, we, like I say, we do our best and, you know, and of course, you know, everybody forgets now and then and says, hey, you know, I meant to call last week. I swear to God, I got busy and I forgot. And, you know, we do our best, but, you know, sometimes people get angry with us and say, you know, why can't I pick it up like right now?
Right.
Well, we're doing our best. We really are. But, you know, just be understanding.
Okay. What's next?
Well, myth number three, you know, if my pet is sick, there is only one diagnosis. It's kind of amazing, actually, how often people assume this to be true, and that includes vets, actually. you know, if there's anything more frustrating for vets and clients than trying to sort out and treat a tangled web of multiple medical problems, I'm not really sure what that would be. Sometimes we have suspicions right off the hop that there is more than one problem. Other times we find something and treat it successfully, only to realize that there's more to it than only that. And, you know, a good example can be found with cats that don't always pee in the litter box. A lot of them have medical problems like crystals in the bladder or urinary tract infections. And so, you know, we find that, you know, when we check for urine samples and do some testing, and then, you know, we're going to treat that. But a percentage of those cats will also have a behavioral component that will remain a problem even after the medical issues are resolved. So, you know, to a client who's just successfully treated their cat for a medical problem and whose cat is still peeing outside the box, you know, that's enormously frustrating, you know. So I just urge people, you know what, call your vet and don't give up. You know, now that one problem has been eliminated, it might have unmasked another one. And, you know, that maybe needs to be dealt with as well.
Yeah, I would imagine incredibly frustrating, but also I would imagine people get pretty scared too, because you think, well, hold on, we rectified this, what's going on, you know? And it could be, it's just, you know, well, I got used to doing this.
Well, yeah, and also just the frustration, you know, like I mean, you know, you've done everything your vet asked you. You've gone in and you've done the testing and you've, you know, fought with the cat to give the pills for 2 weeks or whatever it is that you've done, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, so now what? I've done all of this and
why is it still happening? Yes.
That's right. Why is it still happening? So, you know, definitely it can be something that's very frustrating for people and for vets, you know, when, I mean, I would love to be able to give, you know, the magic pill that fixes everything and, you know, and just be like, wow, that was so great. But that doesn't always happen. And so sometimes it's just a little bit of persistence to get to the bottom of what's left after you've dealt with the stuff that you know is there.
You'd be quite unpopular because you'd close all the other vets then. Well, you'd have to have a supply of those pills going around the world to cover things off. But what's next? What other myth do you want to get into?
Myth number four, my vet will remember all the details of my pet's medical history and what we talked about at previous appointments. So not true. Believe me, we do our best, you know, but with a fully booked schedule and emergencies coming in on top of that, your vet might actually see anywhere from 14 to 25 patients plus in just one day. And, you know, that's why we have to keep medical records. So, you know, don't be offended if your vet tells you they have to review your pet's file before they can discuss something with you, even if you've just been in. They really just want to give you the best advice possible, and they're going to rely on having all the current information accessible to them in order to do that. So, you know, it's actually kind of funny, actually, being a vet. This is kind of a funny story. I remember one time I was traveling along the 401, and you know how they have those rest stations, the gas stations where you can pull off and there's restaurants and bathrooms and all the great things, you know, gas stations and stuff that you need. So I was walking down the hallway in one of those, and I was walking one way and this couple was walking the other way, and we stopped in the middle of causing a big traffic jam and just stared at each other because we recognized each other, but we couldn't place the other one. And, and in my brain, I was racking my brain going, where do I know these people from? But they didn't have a dog attached to them. And when and when all of a sudden I went, you're Fluffy's owner. That's right. That's where we know you. You're dressed in normal human clothes. You're our friend.
It's like seeing your teacher on the street. Like, oh, no.
Oh.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, just the context of everything, you know, just jogs your memory. Yeah. And, you know, and it's actually kind of funny that these kinds of things happen, that I would need a pet attached to an owner in order to recognize the person. But sometimes it seems my brain works that way.
Yeah, it's funny how though people don't feel the same way. Oh, veterinarian Danielle. Hey, you know what? Fluffy's been doing this lately. Like, we're in the park. Go away.
Well, their difficulty in recognizing me was that I wasn't wearing scrubs. I was wearing normal human clothes, like jeans and a shirt. And they were like, wow, you look so different. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Danielle, we're going to have to, I feel like you had one more for us, but we're going to have to pause there because we run out of time. But this was really great. And again, really good context into what our vets and what vet practices are built with. Next week, we're going to be talking about microchipping our cats and dogs. So I'm sure people have tons of questions and are eager to learn more about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Take care.
You too.
Danielle Jeankind joining us every week for Ask a Veterinarian.
When we return, nutritionist Julia Karanchis will visit with us and we'll discuss what's put on the table. Literally is water. We'll be right back. Company, Rumya Muth and Kelly McDonald. We're the hosts of the show wherever you are. Remember, you can take us with you. Tune in radio, OO Tunes, Radio Player Canada. Some of you out there have those Victor Reader streams. Awesome pieces of gear in which you can listen to our podcast. You can listen to the stream of the show. And those apps that I mentioned, amazing. Just do a search for us after you download them onto your smart device and look for us. I have to always remember, Rumya, to mention the smart speakers, because that's a way a lot of people take us into. And wherever you are listening in around the world, Thanks a lot for being being with us. You love that Mythbusters when Danielle brings that on.
Oh, man. I just can't wait because I know she's going to bring in some context of something that she's either faced personally or something that she experiences pretty regularly as a vet. So this one particularly was really fun.
So are you a water drinker?
Yes.
Do you think there's going to be some myths exposed in our upcoming segment about water that we're going to get into?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, there's some confusing things. So Julia Cranches, we're going to bring her on now, and she's going to help us out with this.
I love the world of nutrition. Join me, Julia Cranches, as we talk about everything from food and nutrition to living a vibrant lifestyle.
On our nutrition segment today, we're talking about water and the different types that are out there. Julia, welcome back.
Thanks, guys.
So, my father said to me at a young age, you know what, Cal, what the best drink in the world is? Dr. Pepper? Nope. cream soda? Nope.
Oh.
All right, hot chocolate. No, for sure not hot chocolate.
That's it.
All three of those were good.
Unless it's got a marshmallow in it, Cal. He says, come on in here. Have this. Yeah, but that's water, man. No, don't jump back. Come up here. Have some water. He said to me, trust me and start drinking water. And he said, give me a week of taking a couple of glasses a day. I said, a what? I said, well, that's a long time. Try it. Julia, I never look back. So I'm going to put this in your hands and see where we go with this today.
Yeah. I mean, water is the power source of the body. You know, a lamp, a refrigerator, an oven are all no good unless you've got somewhere to plug them in. And water is that source and allows for, you know, everything in the body to fire the way that it's supposed to be firing. But there's so much to dive into with water. And we're really just going to touch the tip of the iceberg because we've only got a couple of minutes here. But, you know, when you start to think about it, it can get slightly confusing and overwhelming. Like when you go to a nobody's doing that now, but, you know, generally speaking, when you go to a restaurant and you ask for water, sometimes they go sparkling or flat. I just bought a humidifier and the instructions specifically say to use distilled water. And then of course I didn't, right? Cause I got lazy. I'm like, oh, I gotta go buy it, blah, blah, blah. And I used my tap water and then, and then all this calcification happens because there are minerals in our water, which we'll talk about too. And then, you know, way back in the day when I was in nutrition school, buying bottled water was more normal then. Because we were less concerned with environment and more concerned with having clean drinking water, which we thought came from a water bottle. So when I was in nutrition school, all the students were talking about reverse osmosis water versus spring water. Cause you know, that's what we talked about in our after school studies then. And those were the sorts of things that you found on the label, you know, reverse osmosis, spring. And then that's when the whole concept of water really changed because now we had this idea of processed water, right? Like it wasn't just was, you know, is what it was, like, you know, water, this natural substance. But now you're like, okay, well, is it sparkling? Is it spring? Is it reverse osmosis? Is it distilled? And what does that all mean? Like it can get slightly confusing.
Yeah. Throw in some vitamin water and away you go, right? There's just so much that tosses you right off. So is there a simple answer as to which one is best?
No, there isn't. But before we get confusing and before any of the listeners get overwhelmed, I want to read a quote that I found on an article from organicauthority.com spoken by Dr. Stillman when the article was about different types of water and, you know, which to drink and when to drink and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And I found this quote to really calm, I think, any feelings of overwhelmingness that people might have after this talk. And he says, there are pros and cons to each kind of water, and it's important to weigh them all. How does the water taste? Remember, you'll be drinking upwards of 8 glasses daily. Are the contaminants removed? What's the cost? Does it leach minerals from your body? And then come to the conclusion that works for you and your household. And I really liked that quote because, you know, you don't want to get too caught up because the bottom line, Kelly, is you got to drink the water, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the bottom exactly. line. And you answered part of that too with the 8 glasses, right? At minimal, but we'll, I'm sure, cover that a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we got questions for that too. So let's go over it again. I mean, you mentioned casually some of the types of water. How many types of water are there to consider actually, because I feel like we have so much available to us right here. And what makes them different from one another?
So the way in which the water has been filtered, or in some cases not filtered, is really the differentiating factor between the types of water, except when we're talking about sparkling water, because that's just when a little bit of carbonation has been added and it has that fizzy taste. Mm-hmm. So there's distilled water, which is typically not a water that you drink. And this is when water is boiled and the steam from that is collected and turned back into water. Now, this process removes all contaminants, but also all the minerals, because mm-hmm. minerals are naturally found in water, as I can see from my humidifier that now has a bunch of white calcium all over it, which is why I wasn't supposed to use it. But you can wash that off. Anyways, so it just removes everything, but it usually leaves the water tasting flat. So it doesn't make for the nicest of drinking. And then there's reverse osmosis water. And this water is filtered using osmosis to remove contaminants. This also removes all the minerals. This process is different, though, from distillation, because distillation, we're distilling the water, we're boiling it, whereas reverse osmosis is using energy to push water through a semi-permeable membrane, which is how it removes its contaminants. Sometimes they will remineralize the water. So they just add some of those trace minerals back into the water before it's boiled. Sometimes they don't. Again, it's usually information that is, you know, located, like you can find out through the company or on the label or whatnot, but it does remove everything. And then there's spring water, which is such a loaded term, because mm-hmm. spring water is sometimes not even filtered water. And it doesn't usually come from that fresh cold water spring that we might be imagining in our heads that the companies would have you believe that it comes from. It's, you know, like it's sort of the term that we use is greenwashing. It's like the greenwashing of the water industry. Like it doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad, but it doesn't really mean anything. Yeah. It's just, right. You know, so there's that. And that's usually, you know, you're not getting spring water from your tap, but water, you know, in our pipes is typically all filtered irregardless. So there's, you know, like it gets, you got distilled, you got reverse osmosis, and now you've got your spring water, which is, might not even be filtered, because there are contaminants in our water. Like chlorine is a big contaminant in our water. And chlorine is not very good for your gut health. So there is a bonus to filtering things out. I just want to throw that in there for people. Okay. It is good to drink.
And that's the thing.
Water.
And we hear so much, even with our tap water, the, how much, you know, of what's in there. Was it fluoride? Is that what I'm thinking? Yeah. And some of the things that we have to be wary, because now we're learning more about that. And especially if you're trying to do the whole being good with your water. Do you want to go back to how much water we should drink?
Sure. Yeah. We can talk about that for sure. Generally, all the information out there is talking about, you know, your 8 cups of water, which is 2 liters. But there are a couple of factors to consider when you're thinking about your daily water consumption. You know, first of all, how are you feeling? If you're a tired or a sluggish person, I think the first thing you'd want to do is start to increase your water intake. But more specifically, everyone has a different activity level and we're all different sizes. And if you want to get really specific about water requirements, you want to drink 0.5 of an ounce to 1 ounce for every pound that you weigh. So if you're a 130-pound person, you're drinking the max level would be 130 ounces, which is closer to 4 liters. It's 3.8 liters, which is a lot. That's way more than the 2 liters. So two liters is sort of, but this is all, again, are there factors at play here? Like, are you a coffee drinker? Are you really active? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a more active person, or the days that you are active, right? Like in the summer, you go for a walk, you're going to sweat more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Versus mm-hmm. you go for a walk in the winter, like, well, sometimes you sweat, but you know what I'm saying? It's cold. So you're perspiring much less. So you're not losing water. Therefore, you're not needing to replenish as much. Also, I think, most people are eating more fresh fruits and vegetables in the summertime just because of seasonal eating. It's just more accessible, and people don't typically feel like eating a pile of raw cold salads in the winter, but we do in the summer. And right. we've talked about this before in the segment, all those watery vegetables are water intake, you know, so exactly. those are contributing to your water intake too. Don't forget, like, you don't need to right. chug 4 liters of water right now.
Well,
like,
nobody
do that, please.
All right. Because now you'll be told that too, that, hey man, there is such a thing as too much water, especially if maybe you're yeah. not as active and you're sitting around.
Right.
Where does that water go?
Yeah. Well, you're just flushing yeah. everything yeah. out.
You hope that it goes out instead of any retaining.
Right. Right. But I mean, and if you're drinking your 2 liters a day and you're a little constipated and you're a little sluggish, this is maybe a sign that you might require a little bit more, and be mindful of that, and then increase, you know that you can go ahead and increase.
Okay.
Yeah. That's important parts, just like knowing or keeping track of what the signs are, if you're getting enough water or not enough water,
right.
And your activity levels and stuff, which we'll talk about in 2 weeks as well. Right. But I wanted to yeah. go back to filtering water ourselves, Julia, because honestly, I've been a drink out of the tap type of person pretty much my whole life, unless I'm going to a different country or a place where they've specifically
right.
said, please don't drink
right.
out the taps, find
yes.
your own water. And then
yes.
when I look at the price range, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what people charge for bottled water now. But anyway, going back to the filtering, if people are familiar with things like Brita, how useful is that, or necessary even, to filter our water ourselves that are coming out of the tap?
Yeah, Britas are great. They will help to remove some of the chlorine, okay? So a Brita uses a carbon filter or a charcoal filter. Those terms are synonymous. And this filter is good for removing chlorine and some other organic compounds from the water, but it won't filter it as finely as reverse osmosis does. But it does filter, right? We know reverse osmosis removes everything, whereas the carbon filter will just help to reduce the levels. But it is a benefit. And a Brita can be bought just off the shelf, whereas you're not going to be like, you're not distilling water in your kitchen at home. And to put a reverse osmosis system, reverse like a filtration system in your home, is a big financial undertaking. And, you know, unless you really own your home and you're going to live there forever, most people are not doing it. Mm-hmm. So it is like a Brita is a much more convenient way to filter your water just to clean it up a bit. But like, let's not get crazy. Like, our tap water is good. Like it yeah. is filtered. I mean, it's not like you're drinking, you know, straight from Lake Ontario here. Like, that's
right.
not the case.
Well, I was going to say, because when you go out camping and things like that, that's when you really do need to have filters with you.
Yes. Yes.
Literally
yes.
drinking out of lakes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's when you have to be way more mindful, because there's microbes in the water and things can get, you know, not healthy there. But yeah, but a Brita will definitely contribute to the health of the water. And those filters are easily accessible. So I think generally speaking, it does cut down on plastic water bottles that you might be purchasing, and it will clean up your water in an economical and convenient way, which I think okay. are factors to consider.
Well, and that's the thing. And being that fan of water, and being very lucky, Julia, that I have been, I think that it's so, so important when people get on site. And it's hard. I you know, recently
yeah.
had a friend who found out he's a diabetic, and he's very much not a water drinker. And now suddenly, you know, has to really stick that into his life and work
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
Julia, thank
yep.
you. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. And when we get into that, we're going to be getting into when you're dehydrated. So another, as we continue the water chat and more.
Yes, thanks, guys.
Julia Karantzis, our nutritionist. She's with us again in a couple of weeks here on the program. Coming up, half of Canadians say the coronavirus has had a negative impact on their mental health, and it continues. And 4 in 10 think that will last after the pandemic. We'll have a conversation about it when we speak with the Chief Mental Health Officer of KPNG here in Canada. Company with Romeo Muthan, Kelly McDonald, hosts of the program. So earlier I was telling you about places you can certainly listen to the show and take us with you, TuneIn Radio, OO Tunes, and so on. you know what else you can do? You can sit back and take in the podcast itself. You can simply subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. And what you'll do is simply look for AMI Audio's Kelly and Company. And you can listen to the programs, if you'd like to, in their long form, the full show itself, or the segments individual and parceled out available to you, ladies and gentlemen. That's the best way I say listen to the full show. And because with that, you can listen to the audio vanity card that we referenced at the top of the program. Rumya Muthan, Kelly McDonald, hosts of the show.
Okay, Kels. Well, we are going to talk about a few more things when it comes to the pandemic and how we're feeling and how things are going for Canadians. Half of Canadians say that the coronavirus pandemic has had an ongoing impact on their mental health. And four in 10 Canadians think that the impact will last way long after the pandemic.
Yes, sure.
I totally agree. And that's why these stats really stand out for me. We're going to speak to Dennis Trottier right now, Chief Mental Health Officer for KPMG in Canada, to find out more about what these stats mean and what it means for us as individuals. Dennis, thank you so much for coming on Kelly and Company.
You're welcome, Ramya and Kelly. Nice to meet you guys. Thanks for putting this on the show today. I know it's going to make a difference to a lot of folks out there.
Absolutely. I agree. And we always say time really flies when we talk to you guys, amazing people on the show. So let's get right into it. 54% of Canadians say that their mental health has suffered during the pandemic. Does this come as a surprise to you, Dennis?
No, it doesn't. It might come as a surprise to most people, but I wasn't surprised. I mean, that poll for me confirmed, you know, what I've been hearing and seeing generally in my conversations with colleagues right across the country. If something else, if people were not believers before in mental health, COVID has really helped to accelerate that.
Dennis, we've been hearing from so many of the premiers about schools, what to do, keep them open, have online learning going on, which, you know, one of the things that they say is the mental health of our young people in school is really in jeopardy here. But what have you guys found is the age demographic that is suffering the most?
Well, it's interesting that age bracket of 18 to 24, right, seems to be, like all ages are affected, but between that 18 and 44, Kelly, the younger age demographic, you know, those under 34, it's, you could think sometimes to say, you know, you tell a youth, well, you know, I give you 3 meals a day, I give you a car, I teach you university, why are you struggling, right?
But yeah.
If we flash back to when we were that age, we just want to move on with life, right? Get a job, finish our degrees, have graduation. So I like to say we're all in the same storm, Kelly, but we're not all in the same boat. Like, we clearly do not know what is going on in each and other's world. So a little more empathy these days is so critical just to being there for each other.
Well, Dennis, we're so hard because we look at numbers right now. And again, being in London, Ontario, where UWO has real struggles right now, the university with it and the people in that age category, because they want to live. They want to have their social. Last summer, they wanted to be out. They wanted to do things. So we stop and say, oh, come on, you guys, you're part of the big problem here. And like you said, I think some of that empathy of understanding, but guys, this is their careers that are slowing right down. And, you know, they're out dating and meeting people and going out and doing things that young people do.
You know, and it's challenges. I think you hit it, Kelly, is language, right?
Yeah.
I love November. You know, men's mental health, they've rebranded from prostate to men's mental health. And they have a tool, Kelly, that I love. It's ALEC.
Yes.
And the A is ask. You know, ask, how you doing? How you doing, Kelly? And you probably say, oh, I'm fine. Then I should say, oh, really? Like, aren't your kids driving you nuts? Like, how are you drawing borders between this and that? And then the L is listen non-judgmentally. You hit it on the nail, right? As parents, we're good at saying, why are you depressed? I give you a car. But unless you became a doctor overnight, just listen to them non-judgmentally. And then the E in ALEC is encourage them to use resources. Like, you know, like it, turn to jack.org or Movember or CAMH. And the C is check in. You know, if I've checked in with you today, Kelly, I could say, hey, thanks, bud, for allowing me into your circle of care. Why don't I check in with you in a couple of days again? So I think if listeners just remember the tool, ALEC, ask, listen, encourage, and check in, that's a good one to break the ice when we're concerned about a child or a neighbor or an aging parent.
Excellent, Dennis. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, and you know, Ramya, when we think about schooling, I think yes. about that time and all my social and really the holdup for a lot of people. You have your career ahead and all of a sudden, well, hold on, we've got this diversion. My social, I can't hang out or talk to anybody going through the same thing. I would imagine if when you were in school, this kind of thing would have just been an absolute, especially with those of us with a disability, it throws us right off.
Yes. And, you know, school kind of is supposed to be that thing, like it surrounds you, right? Your network surrounds you and your people surround you. But that age group you're talking about, Dennis, from 18 to 35, like there's so much self-growth that happens in that period. So I can imagine, and I'm in that age range, so I can really feel and experience that you feel kind of lost, you know, in a time like this that's now over 365 days of it. You're not really sure what's supposed to happen after this. So there's so much of this spiraling that people are going through. Can you tell us how we can kind of help, if not reverse, help change some of the mental health challenges that people are facing right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Ramya. And where I take people back on that is mindset. What's in your toolbox? You know, unlike physical health, many of us have never really focused on our mental wellness, right? But regardless of where you work, you know, you probably have tools at work and so on, but very few of us invest in getting to know these tools before it's too late, right? I compare it to first aid, CPR. You and I go get that training before we need it, but for mental health, we don't. So I think we need to own this. Like, society and our employers can put out all these amazing tools, but we have to find and invest in them. I.e., I give you a challenge. Instead of putting little smiles on social media or listening to the same bad news, take 10 minutes of that and go read a mental health article. Go to CAMH, go to Jack.org, go to Movember, go to the Royal Ottawa and learn a new tool so that you can be there for yourself, for your own wellness, but also to care for people in the circle of care. And we're not doing enough of that, right? It comes down to education. We're not born with a rule book on all these various illnesses, right?
That's it. That's it. So true. Dennis, when we look at the lockdowns, what are some of the long-term effects that we need to, as well as looking for tools, but what kinds of things that this endangerment pose from the lockdowns?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, right? That, you know, you've got the physical health side that we're all worried about, but the mental health side, I think it's important individually, Kelly, that we find things for ourselves and to get creative about it, right? A lot of people that I support, they'll often, you ask them what they do for themselves, and they'll tell you, well, I used to go to the gym, but the gym is closed. First thing I'll say, there's no parks where you live. Like, you have to get outside of the box and think and act differently. Like, I see a lot of cases where during COVID, it's actually been very positive for people. Why? They've used the white page and said, hey, this is a reset for the planet, for animals and nature, but it's also a reset for us as humans, maybe at relooking at our priorities, i.e., your kids really need to be in 2 or 3 competitive sports. Is one not good enough? You really need to aspire to have a 3-car garage. Is a carport not good enough, right? So people who have white-paged COVID and have used it as an opportunity to rethink their priorities in life, and a lot of these self-imposed goals, you know, that come from this consumerism world that we're in are actually doing fairly well because they've gone back to family basics of being together, you know, and it's a mindset. I keep coming back to mindset, Kelly. You need to take action for your own mental wellness. I can't give for you sure. a list of what works for you because it's different, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Dennis. And the long-term effects, as we kind of reached into at the start of the segment, are in my opinion, obvious, right? We've done it long enough now that the lockdown and going through it and hearing from each other and, like you said, reassessing our priorities, our perspectives with neighbors in our own countries and really around the world. So it's super important that we have these conversations with you and that people get a chance to really dig into their own mental health. Where can we go to learn more about our mental health and more information that we talked about today?
There's so many sources, Ramya, and that's the challenge, right? I mean, in Ontario, an amazing program, it's Bounce Back. It's paid for by our tax dollars. Any listener can Google Bounce Back and self-refer to get free counseling, all kinds of guides, but most of us don't know about that. Mind Beacon, a new therapy app that used to be $500 for 12 weeks. Now it's free, paid for our tax dollars. So, and
that's
finding
amazing.
It is the problem.
Dennis, we really appreciate it. We'll put more information up on our blog and we hope to get you back soon so we can talk more.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis.
Dennis Trottier talking to us. He's the Chief Mental Health Officer for KPMG in Canada about Canadian mental health.
We talk shoe trends with Kia Osborne. Leslie DePoe joins us for our collections and hobbies feature. But up next, our community reporter Wade Brown joins us to talk about the Edmonton Ghost Walking Tours in a moment.
Because as a blind child, I was always told, well, you have to be careful, don't worry about where you're going to hit this. To be able to do judo with sighted people, to be able to hold my own with them and be allowed to throw them and be allowed to choke them, and for them to see that I'm not so fragile, they can choke me too, they can throw me too, and I'm not going to break. That was very satisfying, just being allowed to participate in something rough.
Kelly and Company, sharing your stories.
You know what? Take that time, folks. Not only to shout because hour two of Kelly and Company is here. No. But it's that time of the year. Things start to warm up a little bit. You can open those windows and once in a while yell loud outside. Yeah, because it's spring. Just make sure if anyone calls the police, your head's ducked back in the window already. Ramya Muth and my co-host, I'm Kelly McDonald. Welcome to the program. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we get a chance to visit with our community reporters. They're all over the country, and they bring to us all sorts of interesting stuff that comes their way to talk about. Wade Brown joins us today from Edmonton. Nice to have you back, pal. How you doing?
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Ramya. I'm doing really great. Funny you just mentioned that it's spring and time to start feeling like it. I think it's going to reach 15 to 20 degrees by the end of the week, and things are looking good.
Oh, you guys have that time too, the resources and time to venture down to the river valley and enjoy yourself on, what is it, Rum? My best friend, the vernacular?
Yes. So fun.
And you get to sit down there, and what a wonderful resource, especially at this time of the year. Wade, but something else that we always find fascinating is ghost tours, and you've got one to talk to us a little bit about. This is the Edmonton Ghost Tours in Strathcona.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring this up early because I know a lot of people don't really think about ghost tours until, you know, October starts coming around, but Edmonton has a pretty rich history. It's been around here for definitely over 100, maybe coming up on 150 years here, so we've got a lot of really old hotels, a lot of old buildings that were built around the turn of the last century. Lots of things around the university and around that area, and people like to murder each other. So we just have a lot of events that are going on, and or I should say an event that's going on repeatedly. And so this lady has put together a walking tour of Strathcona, which is the district sort of right next to the university area, and it's available. I put various dates on the list because it's not really constant. Like some weeks are Monday, Thursday, Friday. Some weeks are Monday, Wednesday, Sunday. Like it's kind of a little bit all over the place, but they're starting now, and they're about $16. It's limited to COVID. It's limited because of COVID, so only 10 people per experience, and the tour guide has a you know, one of those outdoor sort of around the neck sound systems so that people have a clear shot and can hear everything that's going on.
Well, that sounds great. Any kind of walking tour, I think, is really great this time of year and then in the fall as well. So this is a really cool sight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I haven't actually gone on the tour, but I've read several blog articles and posts about it over the years, and it just keeps getting more and more popular. So especially, you know, we've got the big McDonald Hotel downtown. Like that's been a big source of various ghost stories. I know every time I go by there, I hear something new about some, you know, you'll hear some clerk was, you know, killed in an elevator, or some room isn't habitable anymore for some reason or other. Or
you sound like a non-believer,
Wade. A Victorian gown is walking around, all kinds of things.
I was saying you sound like a non-believer. Is that it?
Well, I'll believe it when I feel it. I mean, there's too much evidence for me not to definitely put the kibosh on it. But I have an open mind.
Well, some of those old places too, because they've been around so long, you get all sorts of history back, even in times where if somebody was killed or whatever, there wasn't as much investigation, or they just never found the person or whatever happened to them. So of course, their spirits weighed. They're not resting well. they're you know, spirits that are kind of PO'd.
Yeah. And they
sounds
all
like
seem
Wade's
together in
them
downtown
too.
Edmonton.
With all that unrest. All
right. More things to check out in Edmonton. Is this the Edmo Wood sign? Is that
what
you
say? Yeah, so the Edmund, I really wanted to just draw some attention to this because it's kind of a sign. I mean, it's a sign, but it popped up in Edmonton a few weeks ago. And every day or every couple of days, it's just been moving around. And for a few weeks there, people, you know, were really confused because it would show up in the River Valley. It would show up on a hill somewhere. It would show up by the side of the road. And nobody knew where it was coming from or why it was there or anything. But so it turns out to be a promotion by a local radio station, Virgin Radio. And they do, you know, they're a top hits music station type of thing. And my opinion is, because there's a lot of opinions flying around, but I think it's sort of a nod to what's going on in Alberta and Edmonton. So recently, a lot of the laws surrounding filming and videography and that sort of thing and cinema have really just changed really within the last few weeks. And the Alberta government has really opened up filming and film production to higher caps on the levels of production or the amounts of money that can be spent on, you know, developing film and TV and so forth. Because I know up until now, it's all been short films and small productions. Everything that sort of has any size goes to Vancouver or Calgary. But, you know, oil won't last forever. So we're trying to expand our horizons and get into the film industry. So I think people really want to start paying attention to what's going on that way.
I think and I've seen this because, of course, with working in media, I've heard a lot about the government itself too trying to encourage and say, hey, you know, why don't you think of shooting your film in this area or here? Let's try to get some people involved in doing that for jobs. And also, and so with doing that, they're submitting that money, and it's sometimes worth it to a film to be made in a certain area because of the breaks they can get, because of some of the other supports the governments can give. So really, really awesome. That's kind of cool. We'll put information, by the way, folks, about these subjects up on our blog, ami.ca/KellyCo. Let's stick a little bit more with art in that, Wade. The Art Gallery of Alberta, Citadel Theatre, and Windspear Centre.
This is a big cool item, so I just want to sort of get through it for a second here.
Okay.
This is all part of the, I think it's called the Edmonton Spark. It's not exactly a festival. It's more like a chain of events that are going on all over Edmonton, basically,
nice.
And all throughout the next several months. So what happened was a bunch of business owners and event promoters got together and made this production or creation called Edmonton Spark. So the Windspear, the Citadel, and the Alberta Gallery, they have these, you know, open sort of windowed areas or where people can walk by outdoors and see, you know, symphony performances that are mostly videotaped, I think, as well as some art exhibits and other shows. And All kinds of areas downtown are putting up big displays, sculptures, performances, and they're all at different times and locations. And so they're just really trying to get people to either come to Edmonton, but also just check out that sort of staycation vibe. Like, they want people to really rediscover Edmonton right now.
Wow. That's really great. And there's different things that you need to remember, right, in terms of dates and times and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some of these productions are starting now and running for a week or two. Some are starting in May or later. Some are only around seasonally because they're outdoors. There have been, you know, one interesting display is various companies have been putting up these huge, I won't call them statues or sculptures, but they're just these huge displays. Like, there's a bunch of birds standing on that building, or there are these weird aliens that are standing all over the town that are like 5 meters tall or something. And they're all just trying to draw attention or to highlight some aspect of Edmonton or some of the businesses and cultural associations around here. So if you keep your eyes open or if you keep your ear to the ground, there are just lots of things to see that are a little bit out of the ordinary right now.
I think that's the best way, especially with downtown struggling, finding things that we can do with social distancing. I love the Windsphere window watching experience where you get the video display to connect with the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra. This is really what you want to see, or groups that right now, Wade, are struggling, and this is a way to remind people, hey, we're here.
Absolutely. Even one of the symphony, one of the things that I think I'll try to check out is there was a fellow who took his cello out in the field and just tried to serenade the cows for a couple of hours. That is one event I want to check out.
Wow. And the uniqueness that some people bring to these kind of things is really, really tremendous. And when you see how unique, and I know Toronto boasts of the Illuminato and different things like that that go on. We have a few things in London that at the best of times when things are better are able to happen. And you hear about these things in all these different cities. So really nice to see Edmonton doing this, Wade.
Absolutely.
We will, again, put all this stuff up on our blog, ami.ca/KellyCo. And Wade, when you're out there listening for, you know, the cello in the field, boy, you'll have that nice accompaniment, maybe the wind blowing and the cello playing, all of that for such ambience. And I think that's wonderful. Is it the music that you like? Obviously, I know looking at birds on the top of a building, we're all three of us are kind of, oh, that's nice, they're up there. But is it the music you go for when it comes for something like this, or can you get closer to something to touch?
I'm a big symphony guy. It's one of my like favorite art forms. I actually when I was younger, I played the tuba in a local orchestra for several years, and since then I've been a vocalist with a choir, and we sing with the Edmonton Symphony a couple times a year. We've done the Rings in concert. We've done video games live. We have a lot of big shows. So it's a lot. I love the symphony.
Oh, man. That's really wonderful and such a way to relate to it. And yes, that's right. I remember that you have had those opportunities. Wade, as usual, wonderful stuff. And of course, you bring the arts flavor to us too, which is beautiful. And a little dash of hauntings in that. Take care, my friend.
Always. Yep. Have a good day, guys.
Wade Brown, he's our community reporter out in Edmonton. We will put everything he discussed up here in a little more detail, too, for you, so you can link over and check things out at ami.ca/KellyCo. That's our blog, and we meet with our community reporters on Tuesdays and Thursdays right here on the program. Let's look ahead here, ladies and gentlemen. We've got lots of great programming on the show still to come. Key Osborne is going to be here in just a sec. We're going to discuss shoe trends after this. Applications are now open for AMI's scholarship. If you're a Canadian student with a permanent disability, learn more about how you can apply for the 2021 AMI Robert Pearson Memorial Scholarship. Visit ami.ca/scholarship for more information. I'm Kelly McDonald, host of the program in the London, Ontario home studio. Ramya Muthan in her home studio in Toronto.
So now let's get to this once a month conversation we like to have on the second Tuesday. It's Fashion with Kia Osborne.
Hi, I'm Kia Osborne, and I'm here to share all things fashion to outfit you from the top of your head to the soles of your feet.
Kia, today the focus is on the soles of our feet. It's been a pretty interesting year for fashion. I'd say let's just get comfy, but there's a little more than that to the fashion stuff that's going on. So there we're transitioning. Sure. Yes. And we're transitioning into spring 2021. So I'm hoping that the leisured and comfort part is here to stay as it continues to be like sweatpants and athleisure wear. But we're talking specifically about footwear. So let's get into it.
Yes. So hope you all can hear me okay. So for footwear, so I know you're going to love this because when this popped up in my research, I'm like, yep, this is for Ramya. So the fuzzy slipper.
See, we went to the other end for the hats. Oh, yeah. Kelly's all over that.
Yeah, for Kelly. Right.
And now our soles of our feet.
The soles of our feet is just this is specifically for Ramya, the slide. So you're going to see slides from, you know, your house slipper has now graduated to outdoors. So you're stepping, you're bringing that leisure wear, sleepwear inspiration to the outdoors. You're going to see them out, you know, Urban Outfitters had a full fur version. And of course, you remember the colors this year are the lime greens, the yellows, the powder blues getting into the pastel. So you're going to see a lot of these fuzzy slippers or these fuzzy slides per se in those trend colors. So, you know, from the bed to the bus stop, there you go. You got your shoe. And you have your high-end version by which I researched, it's the Waverly Slide by Jack Ernest. So it's quite expensive. Or you can get a really cute pair at Urban Outfitters. Also, too, not to forget that, you know, of course, your Nike and Adidas, they have their, you know, the sports-inspired slides.
The slick slides.
Which are great. Yeah, slippers for both male, female. So again, that's unisex. So that is a great trend to pair again with your denims, your cut off shorts for the summer. And of course, your leisure track suits, your coordinates.
Okay. I like slides.
Mm-hmm. I know you
I just wanted to put that out there. Yeah.
That's why I went first.
I know. And if you really want to, and if you want to be indulgent, you could get a pair of Shearling slides, which are by Manolo Blahnik, which are an exorbitant amount of money, but there's
well, she makes big bucks, so that's okay.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
So, just, Ramya, there you go. And the tan, I will, after this call.
Okay.
Sign her up.
So,
all right, next up.
If we want to keep with the minimalist style, so again, flat sandals are back in trend. The thong sandal, you saw a lot of it, on the runways again. A lot of the thong sandals with the beautiful wraparound, which elongates the ankle and up to the calf, really great. Again, it's all about that comfort. Prada, Chloe, they had those, those great styles. Gucci. And again, it can be either as flat to the ground, so that very casual beachy look, or again, if you want a kitten heel, which is a very, a kitten heel is about 1 to 2 inches in height. So that would, again, elevate your look to a bit more dressy. So if you want to dress up your casual look, again, you can have your flat thong sandal, either wrap around or that mule type sandal. Again, that thong sandal is in. And of course, the colors, really beautiful, that lemon yellow, which again, that is on trend, or even that mustard yellow. Beautiful, beautiful on the foot.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And if I can keep, I guess I'll just keep going because there's shoes. So they did also the Mary Jane. That's coming back to your, that really brought me back to childhood, because again, the Mary Jane is a flat rounded whole shoe, sole almost mimicking a loafer, so it has that loafer comfort, but again, it has the strap across the top of the foot, So, again, you saw Gucci bringing back that style and, of course, wearing it with ankle socks, which I don't really have a penchant for that look, but it's very smart. It's very, very preppy, very, you know, again, very youthful and comfortable. And if you really want to have a statement shoe, so they've done some different variations with the Mary Jane. So there is a kitten heel version, which is in this lime green, and it's a pointed toe, very elegant. So again, for that, you know, if you want to try to, you know, I know we don't really have anywhere to go except from the fridge to the couch, but if you want to dress up for that occasion to saunter onto the fridge, the a really beautiful pump, a kitten heel pump would elevate your look while you're in your satin pajamas.
Yeah. That's what you okay. do, man. Just for that walk.
That sounds like porch sitting, right?
Yeah.
Or are we actually going somewhere?
Well, I thought posing in front of the fridge she was talking about, but
posing in front of the fridge.
Okay. Got
that's
it.
From the fridge to the sofa. That's the kitten heel pump. Because again, once we're out and about, this is great. The kitten heel pump would be great, especially in a statement color as that apple green, green apple, that tart green apple color. Again, that's beautiful for, you know, from, you know, the office to date night to a nice function of patio. But again, your fridge will be your option for now. So yeah. Sorry to say.
You can wave at everybody on the TV that's on the patio.
That's right, with your shoe. So a Western, again, if you're getting back into boots, again, because a lot of that transitional, we're still in that transitional, these traditional temperatures. So the Western style, the cowboy boot is back, and you can wear these in the summer, again, with the cutoff shorts or, tucked, you know, have your jeans tucked in. Both great for men and women. And you're, again, it's there, you know, with the wonderful buckles, the stitching, you know, fire flame stitching. And again, you can get them in a multitude of heights. So again, you can get the cowboy boot up to above, right up to the base of your knee, or you can get ankle or booty type cowboy boots. So again, that'd be more suited to, you know, the males. And again, a multitude of colors. You're getting it in your, you know, calfskin tans. Of course, you're black. I've seen them in white because, again, as we talked about spring fashions, white boots are on trend. So you're going to see white cowboy boots.
Mm.
Boots have been trending everywhere too. Go ahead, Kelsey.
Yeah, and that's okay. I like the idea of the shorter, like, you know, as low as you could get them would be kind of nice with that style. But white always really surprises me, especially with the care and take, you know, when you get something like footwear.
It is. I mean, again, your shoemaker is your best friend, and also investing in some great, depending if you're, you know, again, if you're into the vegan leathers, you know, they're easily cleaned by wiping them with a little bit of soap and water. But again, if you have leather, which again, I still love my leather shoes, getting that white polish, or again, really connecting with your shoemaker to make sure they're buffed and shined properly. But even with the cowboy boot, that rugged scuff look is right on trend with cowboy boots because you want to have that rugged edged look. So that's for cowboy boots. And again, this kind of catapulting off of that, there is the equestrian look. Again, Ralph Lauren, he's the king of the equestrian boot. The riding boot will be back for the fall. So it's a bit too, we're getting into spring now. So for fall, the equestrian boot, either in a soft caftan, a soft calfskin tan, or again, a leather, you know, again, all the designers are doing it. You know, we're seeing Stella McCartney's done it. Gucci's done it. Again, Ralph Lauren, he's the king of that, the riding boot. And again, the riding boot will hit right on the knee. So you're going to get, you know, again, that sleek, very clean look. Beautiful boot. It that's an investment piece because it always, always comes back on trend.
I agree. And I've seen that too. Like, you know, you just go browsing and see that riding boots are everywhere also. Does it work for comfort? Like, is it known for comfort?
Definitely, because the riding boot is, again, because if you think of equestrian, the equestrian fashion, It's a thick sole, flat sole, rounded toe. And the leather is, you know, it's worked in. The leather is quite worked in because, again, it fits the shaft of the leg. It elongates the leg. So you want that comfort. So it is a comfort boot. And again, if you want more comfort, again, consult with your, always pair up with your, how come I'm just losing it today? I forgot the name. Your shoe repair person. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ramya, for helping out. Again, if you want it tipped with
cobbler.
Wow. See,
your cobbler
left us hanging the whole time.
Uh-huh. Yes. So again, because leather soles can be a bit slippery. So if you want them, resoled with rubber for more comfort and safety, that's something that you could do. I've actually done that with my boots. So they're timeless. I've had them for 4 years and counting.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty good. I mean, I don't know, Kia, if you've seen any of my shoes, but I take really good care of them. No scuffing at all. And, you know, I'm proud of the way that I keep my shoe conditions. Not all that was a lie. But it is good to get some of the ones that you know will last the longest because, not all of us are great at that.
Well, if you want more of a rugged shoe, again, mm-hmm. Another trend that I'm really happy is back, the combat boot. Oh. Just, I am so happy that chunky, thick sole. It's called the Love Sole because the tread of that sole. And again, it's kind of reminiscent of they're bringing back that hiking look. So mm-hmm. It's a combat boot / hiking boot. That is on trend. And again, it's transitional for spring because you're going to still see, you can wear it with your white jeans. You put on a combat boot, or if you're having a long flowy dress for women, long flowy dress, you got your ankle combat boot with a thick tread. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And again, all of these shoes have style and comfort built in, which is great. There was a beautiful boot. Can't recall the designer. I think I put in the notes, but they actually had a boot that was suede and leather and rubber. And in tan color. So again, it's fashionable and functional. So you're getting the best of both. But again, that's a statement boot, but the combat boot / hiking boot on trend.
Okay. Any other last ones you want to get to before we go?
Oh my gosh. I mentioned platforms. So platforms are back. Again, you can see the platform in the Mary Jane style or again, a platform boot. I'm just going to run through really quickly, the Love Sole, which again, as I was talking about, is that thick, chunky sole. So you saw Mary Jane's with that almost like a platformed type sole, really on trend for the season. And I talked about platforms, sandals, ooh, chains. So if you're into adornment, chains on your loafers or on your slides, as I mentioned before, a chain across the top of the foot, that's on trend. And also your strappy sandals, because we'll be going out having patio season or again, hanging out by the fridge, strappy sandals with chain adornment is on trend. So look out for those special details in your shoes.
Awesome, Kia. Thank you so much. We'll wrap it there. You went through a lot of shoe trends today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kia Osborne joining us on our fashion segment. That's on the second Tuesday of every month.
Just leave that tray out that you have for the winter boots and just leave your shoes on there so they look good. We'll take a break, ladies and gentlemen. And when we return, we have our collections and hobbies feature. We're going to be visiting with Leslie DePoe. She's going to be breaking down her love for step aerobics next. Remember, if you can't be here for the original broadcast of the program, we're here live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Check us out on repeat, 5 o'clock, midnight, 5 a.m. in the morning, all Eastern time. You can find Kelly and Company across this great land of ours and around the world using TuneIn Radio, OOTunes, or any of those kind of apps, or maybe just visiting from ami.ca. Just check out the website. So, Ramya has really lined up a nice bunch of people to come on and talk about collections, things that they're collecting, the hobbies that they're interested in. This is a segment that we really get into because you get to learn a lot about some of the things that people are really passionate about. So we explore those collections and the stories that might be behind those collections and hobbies that people are interested in. Sometimes it's a very interesting hobby that they cherish, just like that collection. And today is one of those kind of times. Joining us is registered nurse Leslie DePoe, who joins us once a month on the program and visits with us and talks all things health related. Leslie, welcome back as you're here today to talk about your love for fitness. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Kelly. How are you guys doing?
Awesome. And this is going to be really fun. And we're going to get we're going to get you on the show today and you're back tomorrow. So we'll wait, save tomorrow's stuff for tomorrow. Funny, that's novel. And let's start with the deepest part of your love for fitness, step aerobics. Like, would you tell us what it is
before
first?
I absolutely will. And I'm laughing before we even get into this because I just want it to be known that I am exposing myself as a bit of a lunatic in this, but I'm 100% okay with it. So step aerobics, let's discuss. Like picture your Jane Fondas from the 80s, perhaps into the 90s. We're talking like that sort of that box on the ground. Picture a lot of people with sweatbands on, maybe some leg warmers if you'd like them. Everyone's bouncing around in a room and there's usually some sort of a choreography involved and then a step. I like to describe it as a dance class with a box in the middle. That's the best way to describe it. But some high impact, high intensity aerobics essentially.
Yes. We'll get into why I like step two thumbs up. But yeah, it's like a pretty low bench, right?
That's exactly. It's probably about we'll call it maybe 4 inches or so off the ground. And usually that, like in terms of sort of the actual, the space it takes up, I'd say they're mostly about we'll call it 3 feet wide, and maybe another 12 inches deep. So it's not a huge platform by any means, and you can add risers. So you can make it taller if you want, and obviously harder, or it can be a little bit lower to the ground, and you step up onto the step, and then back onto the ground, up onto the step, back onto the ground, and somewhere in the middle, we flip ourselves around and do a bunch more spinning and turning.
It gets pretty intricate. I know, it does. So when did it start trending, really? You mentioned the 80s, 90s. Like, is that when everybody started realizing what step is?
I mean, I want to say my love for this happened before I even exited the womb. But yes, it did take off in the 80s and into the 90s. I would say my love for it, not to age myself too much, but my love for it certainly fell in line with that. I'd say late 80s, early 90s. And then as I got older and I really got into fitness as sort of a late teen and into my early 20s. I started thinking, well, why on earth, if I'm paying to go to the gym, isn't there a way for me to make this a better deal for myself? So I actually ended up becoming a certified aerobics instructor. And then that only fueled my love for this absurd passion even more.
Wow. I could just hear it now. People, friends of the family saying to your parents, well, it's interesting that little weird thing that Leslie does with her feet. Look at that.
That's so cool.
That's a child who loves to move. How do you take part in step then now?
So essentially like the sort of, I would say the majority of people like to go to a class in a group setting of some kind, usually at a gym. Obviously those options are out for most of us these days. But thank goodness the 80s and the 90s brought us the VHS tape. So that was very helpful in fueling the passion. And then we moved to DVDs. And I will say now I troll the internet like some sort of a crazed lunatic finding these really sort of complex aerobic classes. Now, the really cool thing about this, which is one of the things I love, is that once you sort of understand, it's all repetitive patterns. So once you understand what the patterns are and how they are described, or they call them call-outs, you don't even have to be watching anybody. You don't need any of that. People can just cue you verbally, and you can do the moves on their own. And the truth is, you can do it even if there's not a step in the middle of this. Like I say that's, you know, it is step aerobics. But the truth is, if you're new to this or low impact or whatever the case may be, you can do this without the step. You just learn the cues, which can be described to you really nicely in detail. And then you can do the moves with these call outs, they call them. So even sometimes on YouTube, I'll just find people just as crazy as me who just sort of record themselves doing the call outs. And then you don't even have to watch anything. There's no visual necessary. You can just go off the audio cues, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really interesting because I think people have picked up different parts of step aerobics that they really love. And you can spend a lot of time with it at home, but people have already also done like tons of choreographies and things like with it. I know when I was in high school, a lot of people for talent show would somehow implement step aerobics into there. So other than the step itself, actually, can we talk about that for a second? So how often do you upgrade your step? And, you know, can you get like a cheap step or a functional step versus something that's more, you know, up there? Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yes, you can. They sort of vary all the way, like you name the budget, they exist. So the one I currently have, because again, we're in pandemic mode and one can't just go shopping for these things anymore. I think I found it at Walmart for like $20. Like it was pretty reasonable. That being said, there is sort of an old school version of the step that has sort of a rubber top to it that helps you with your feet, you know, gripping. And it had square-based risers that sort of fit underneath the step and helped raise it further up the ground. Those are apparently, that's the one that I grew up with, but those are now referred to as the retro steps. And I did try to find one on Kijiji the other day. And let me just tell you, they go for a very pretty penny now. So it's not necessary to do that. You don't have to go to such great lengths. You can certainly find them at any, like I said, like a Walmart has them, just a, I'm sure Canadian Tire, you know, those kinds of things. But the truth is, like I said, I sort of stress this because I want people to join me in my passion. You don't even need the step. You could really just, you could honestly just do it bare on the ground, no problem, and just follow those cues and you'd be able to get yourself started.
That's great. That's really great. Could you utilize something safely to be that step if somebody had something? Is there anything that comes to mind that you know, like you say, since it's so hard to find, that you'd feel okay that you wouldn't step and it bounce, you know, like flip on you or anything like that?
Okay, so here we go. Now I'm just going to further reveal myself to be a crazy step person. So when I didn't have a step, I would go into my backyard and I would just use the deck.
Right.
So because the deck would maybe only be, you know, 4 inches off the grass. Now, you can't do the full routines because in step, a lot of the time you're going over top of the step. You do a move on the top and then you continue over onto the other side. Obviously, you can't do that if you're on a deck. It's sort of a one-way street, if you know what I mean. But it's okay. When you're obsessed as I am, that will suffice. I really just needed something to be able to walk up and down off of and bounce around and do some moves. And so you could certainly do that even if you just wanted to kind of get yourself started nice and easy. But like I said, I really think the key to it, you know, I'm laughing because the other day I was in the downstairs trying to, you know, work up this routine and my husband caught sight of this. And he commented, you know, this is the reason why people don't like to do this. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, nobody knows what you're doing. He said, you're just yelling out things to yourselves. Nobody knows what these moves are. It's very intimidating for people. And he said, and then the box is in the way and then you fall over. He said, nobody wants to do this with you. So I can't stress enough that you really can do it without having to step onto anything, because a lot of the work, you know, the aerobic part of it is like Ramya said, it's the choreography of it. It's learning those call outs and understanding what it means when you do a kickback or a knee up or a side tap. Once you get those pieces, box or no box, step or no step, the fun, I promise you, the fun doesn't stop.
Wow. Yeah. It's interesting because when, like you said, when you refer to the 80s, 90s, a lot of that was for the reason of people not having to spend lots of money to do something or feel that they had to have all this fitness equipment around or that something they could do at another place if they were going away for a couple of weeks or something like that. I thought that was, and when you got Jane Fonda, them saying, hey, this is something cool. A lot of people dived into it, didn't they?
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. And that's one of the things I love about it. I love that it's really accessible. Like, again, I really challenged my husband on his opinion the other day because I said, I know it looks intimidating at the beginning, but keep in mind, I've been doing this for years and years. Mm. You can start this in the most basic of ways. And there's so many add-ons you can do to get the aerobic benefits out of it without having to complicate your feet. Just lifting your hands above your heart, like just moving your arms over your head as you do any of the basic moves, instantly raises your heart rate simply because it takes more effort for your heart to pump blood further above your heart. you can up your aerobic content without having to do the tricky Fred Astaire dance moves on the bottom. That happens to be where my passion lies, but it doesn't have to be that way. You can approach this at any level of fitness that you have and any level of sort of choreography or dance background. It's it really is a come one, come all. And then you just get to modify it from there, which is one of the things I love most about it. And it's one of the things I loved when I used to teach aerobics, was that really you could have everybody in that class, people who had never done this before and people who'd been doing it for 20 years, you could all be in the same room following the basic choreography together, but modifying it to make it your own and in order for you to get the best workout out of it.
Okay, and speaking of come one, come all, Leslie, how big or how involved are you with the overall STEP community? Is that a thing? Like, are there forums and people and YouTube channels?
God. Yes, there are.
Okay, good.
Yes,
good.
There are many forums. There are lots of Facebook groups. I have to say I've joined several of them, but I'm a bit of a quiet person online. I don't do it to interact as much. I do it to sort of, for lack of a better word, to creep on other people's choreography that they're sharing. They're sharing it openly. I'm not doing anything wrong. But there's lots of great people out there that are just coming up with such wild stuff that you never would have thought of before. And like I said, I love that now that there's sort of this language around it, you can really just like, I found stuff on Spotify that's just somebody like, you know, that's just on a streaming service that are literally just doing the call outs. And then you can do the moves, you can get your own music out, whatever makes you happy. But yes, I have dipped my toe into the to the step forums of the world, shameful as it may be.
Well, it's crazy how much so many things now are made accessible in so many different ways. And those of us with disabilities, you really, where before you're like, well, no one's, I don't know what to do. The flexibility of step and, you know, making things that you can, you know, once you kind of have your own and do your own, and what you're telling us is available, what the videos, the resources, it really does make you stop and say, you know what? It's not like it was in the 80s, 90s, whatever, because it's just people who have the love of it and are finding those ways to be inclusive.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Kelly. And that's such a great point about it. And I really think that's why it has the kind of longevity it's had for me, is because it's so accessible, because it's anybody from any walk of life with any level of fitness, with any disability, there's something in there for everybody. It's just a matter of kind of finding your own groove, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And then honestly, stop worrying about what you look like and just enjoy it. Just feel what it feels like to move your body. And I'm telling you, you get some of those jams on and boy, oh boy, I dare you to stop.
Yeah. Well, it has that acceptance that yoga does when you really think of it, because it's inclusive.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say,
I think that's such an important part of it, is just to know that people have that ability to feel like they're welcome. I think that, you know, a lot of the times in the beginning anyway, aerobics or going to the gym was such an intimidating, such a daunting thing for people. And it kept so many people away from bettering their physical health. And just knowing that there are communities like that that are so welcoming and so inclusive, hopefully it's just another way that we're opening the door for people to get better health.
Yes. And I got to say, so a few years ago, after I came on the show, there was someone who came on biweekly to talk fitness with us until very recently. But she's the one who introduced me to STEP, and I now have this love for STEP. I don't think I'm at the caliber that you're at, Leslie. I don't know about all these choreographies and stuff, but, you know, my heart rate goes up, and it's just so much fun to be in your body, to move around, and to have, for me, actually, to have that focal point of the step. I know you're talking about not necessarily needing it, but to have that piece of equipment in the middle of a room that you can use as your tap point, you know, like that's in front of me. I know that it's behind me now. I know it's to the left or to the right. And so let's hear a little bit from her. This is Siobhan.
Hey, it's Siobhan calling, and I just had to comment on your upcoming hobbies and collections segment on aerobic step. I hear that Leslie DePoe will be on talking about step aerobics and how much she loves it. I can so relate to this. I love doing step aerobics. I really get into it. There are times when I can't do it, so I'm creating the the routines in my head. I'll hear a song and I'll think, wow, that would make a great step aerobic song. So then I create the routine in my head to that song. I can really relate to this. I'm looking so forward to listening to her love of step aerobics, how she got into it, etc. And I can truly understand why she enjoys it so much, because I do too. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Well, there you go. So we're definitely not alone here. Like, literally the three of us out here just shouting out step because it's that much fun. And I just wanted to ask you, before we wrap things up, Leslie, do you do shoes or no shoes? Or do you go through phases?
Great question. So I'm going to tell you, I have the feet of an 80-year-old, so I have to do shoes. Because if I bounce around without my orthotics on, it's a very sad state of affairs the next day. So I'm a pro shoe kind of a person, but the truth is you could do this any old way you'd like to.
What I absolutely love too is, and Siobhan made reference, and you know, having that piece of equipment to use in the middle of the room, which for those of us with vision impairment, it helps you with that kind of location, that central thing. So you know around you how much you have, and you can be much more freer, Leslie, as you're moving.
Absolutely. And you know what I'd recommend too, and this is what I do at, like in my basement, is I've got kind of one of those little foam mats down just so that I'm not kind of bouncing up and down on the hard floor, and then right. The steps in the middle. So it's really nice because then you've also got the guide of the foam. You can right. Feel yourself if you're going off the edge of that. You've got the step in the middle. And then like you said, it's a touch point to know, okay, it's to the left, it's to the right. Oh, I'm off the mat, back into the center. So the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, you can really move around. Thanks, Leslie. Of course, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Leslie DePoe sharing with us her love of step. Boy, I learned a lot listening in on that. Boy, we do this once a month, folks. We have our collections and hobbies segment on the program. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll wrap up the show. We'll do that by telling you what's coming up on our program tomorrow. We'll check in with Paul Daniel from Now with Dave Brown to see what they have happening and review a little bit of our program. It's Rumi and Kelly. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Rumya Muth and Kelly McDonald. We're the hosts of Kelly and Company. We invite you to check out the Kelly and Company podcast. To simply subscribe and download it wherever you get your favorite podcast using whichever podcatcher. You can find other programs here at AMI Audio. Just do a search. There's a huge plethora of them, from The Blind Reality to Voices of the Walrus to our show. Rum, we have segments people can check out, so let's refer them to a couple from today's show if they'd like to.
Absolutely. We talked to Dennis Tortier of KPMG Canada, and really it was a mental health talk and really a reminder and refresher for people that a lot of us are going through a lot of different things and challenges around this time with the pandemic lockdown. But he talked about some of the long-term effects for particular age groups and why that means we need to take some more serious action towards our own mental health and letting people around us know, or people around us realizing that this is not just a, oh yeah, yeah, you got everything, you're living okay, so let's just count the blessings. There are things that we really need to take into consideration for the challenges that we're facing and what that's going to look like, I don't know, a month from now, a year from now, and even longer down the line. So Check that out on the podcast.
And some of that compassion that we have to have, but he gets into it very nicely. Mm-hmm. Also, health-wise, I'd like to point out that our nutritionist, Julia Karanchis, was here to talk about water. Really important, not so much the different kinds of water out there, the importance, obviously, to your body, but just kind of keeping it straight a little bit on maybe how much we should or shouldn't have, and breaking it down so we know what some of the different types are and where we may not have to feel, oh, wow, I you know, do I have to sweat having that much or that kind of water. Really good talk with her today on the program. Check that all out via the Kelly and Company podcast. Simply subscribe and listen to the segments individually parceled out, or the complete show. Matt Agno gives us today our audio vanity card at the end of the complete version. Paul Daniel joins us. He's one of the producers at Now with Dave Brown, also available via podcast. Paul, what's on the show tomorrow starting at 9 a.m.?
It is. Oh, is it 9 a.m.? Hey, Kelly. Hey, Ramya. Tomorrow's show, Amy Amanti, our community reporter in Vancouver, will tell us more about the crowdsourced description project being done by the Vocal Eye. The project involves a weekly watch party to see accessible art forms. And as you know, Kelly, earlier this month, Facebook said that more than 533 million Facebook users' information was leaked. Mm-hmm. So he'll be giving us some. Yeah, he'll give us some steps on how we can make sure to find out that our Facebook information is still secure and that it wasn't leaked. So he'll give some steps on how to do that. And veteran political correspondent Craig Oliver will give us his review with Dave Brown on the political conventions held online by the Liberals and New Democrats this past weekend.
That was kind of an odd one, eh, Paul? I kind of thought they'd be on separate weekends. Aren't they usually?
Usually they are. But I guess it's a strange thing because they make very careful when do each party has their conventions. Let's not clash with it. But
yeah, I couldn't decide which cartoon to watch. It was crazy. Anyway, thanks, pal.
Thank you, Kelly.
Paul Daniel, producer over there at Now with Dave Brown. Again, their show at 9 a.m. in the morning, also available as repeat here on AMI Audio or as a podcast as well. Rum, go have a couple of glasses of water. You're still not topped up for the day. And don't disguise it as tea all the time, please.
Why?
Because it dehydrates you too.
Oh, does it?
You got to drink Jeffy's green tea.
I have those too. You know, I was thinking that if there's one person we need to beat with our water consumption, it's Jeffy.
Oh, yeah.
He's always competition.
Yeah, he loves his water. Don't send him to, he'll deprive the grass in Vegas if we send Jeff there. Where'd the water go? Oh, there's the Ryman. Thanks, Rum.
Thank you.
Producer Jeff Ryman, speaking of that fellow, tomorrow we'll return to the show and he'll have the latest health headlines to kick us off tomorrow. On In the Know with Margaret Weldon, she's going to be giving us tips on how to set up a space in our home to participate in safe fitness activities. We have the Wednesday edition of Buzz with Bill with producer Bill Shackleton. A fun camp in Manitoba is helping teens who may be struggling with anxiety and other mental health challenges. Jim Crisco, he'll be joining us to talk to us a little bit about it, give us some details. Also, with all the questions, concerns, and evolving information regarding COVID-19 vaccines, registered nurse Leslie DePoe, who you just heard a few moments ago, returns to the program to give us a look at the picture of what's going on right now. And we'll do a little bit of our independent living skills tomorrow. We'll talk about money on it. That all starts at 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. A Wednesday show with you and us. We'll talk to you then. I'm waving at you.
Well, it's been a good year for my home studio. Since I've been spending so much time here, I spent some time and upgraded my desk and upgraded my speakers. I've got a new amp, even put up some acoustic sound panels. Now, of course, as a professional, I want to make sure I've got the most accurate setup that I can. When it comes to consumer level equipment, like earbuds or even some headphones, some type of desktop speakers even, they're not always sensitive enough to reproduce the little sounds, the little background sounds like a car going by in the background, even background noise like just the sound of your air conditioner kicking on, things like that. So sometimes people get away with a little bad mixing or a rough edit here and there just because your audience's equipment might not actually be able to reproduce that little mistake. But with my system now, if I'm just sort of sitting here watching a sitcom or a movie after work, I've been able to pick out little funny things like that, like maybe on set there was a fridge fan that someone forgot to unplug during recording. It also makes it a lot easier to pick out when something's been overdubbed. You know, maybe a scene was shot on top of a building in New York City and the ambience is just way too loud and you hear traffic and all kinds of terrible things in the background. So the editor comes along later and says, okay, we need to do a dialogue replacement recording. And they have the actors all come back in studio and they show them the screen of what they're doing on screen and they try their best to overdub what they originally did on set. So sometimes you actually reach a point where your speakers sound so darn good that the material just sounds bad.
You've been listening to the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
The Real Deal airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform.